I'm with you all the way here on a Thursday morning drive. It's 6:15. That's K-Earth Big Kahuna time. Checking the K-Earth sports page. Dodgers play at Philadelphia this morning, and the Angels will host the Yankees tonight here in the Southland. Corbett's got all that and more. Oh, by the way, the Raiders, Rams, Chargers, and 49ers have all opened their training camp today. That's why there's been such a big rush on metal cups. Brentwood, a 93 KCBS FM. This is Brian Roberts. Thanks for listening on a Thursday night. Southland weather for Los Angeles and Orange County. More earth tone skies on the way. Sunny and hot everywhere.
Ah, Jeannie, it's time for the Blue Power Hour again.
Again.
This is a third start, right?
Uh-huh, but you know, good things come in threes.
That's right, and look who we got here today. We got you, Humble Harv, and Brian Roberts.
Now, would you like to explain to some of the younger people in the audience who Humble Harv and Brian Roberts are? I know their voices very, very well, but there might be some people across the world that haven't heard them quite yet.
These are two of the finest speaking voices in the history of American radio, Jeannie.
You bet that's right. And I know I grew up with them.
That's right. KRLA, K-Earth, they've been all over. Made a lot of people happy.
And we're glad to have them joining us live and in the flesh today. So.
Absolutely. We're going to make it through this time, aren't we?
You got my word on that. Yeah.
All right. Are you ready with that one?
I'm ready.
How about a little Huey Smith and the Clowns?
It's coming right at you.
Excellent. Huey Smith and the Clowns, boys. Rockin' pneumonia and the boogie-woogie flu. You know, today the radio industry is dominated by a small number of financially powerful corporations that own more than one station in the same city. Much of what today's radio broadcasting business accepts as everyday reality was prohibited by federal law not long ago. Gone forever are the days when radio station ownership was characterized by a diverse range of pioneering owners and their communication companies. Radio programming of the past had primarily a social and cultural identity. Today, radio is primarily a money-making machine for major corporations whose thought is on dollar signs, not society or culture. Uh-huh. Today, we have Humble Harv and Brian Roberts, two major radio men who are going to help us explain what has happened to
today,
radio.
Today it's a chicken and egg business.
Yeah, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Man, you know, we're part of the problem. We work for one of these big companies that have 600 radio stations, and if we don't go along with the game, we're out of work.
Well, I visited you.
Yeah.
While you were
on
the air out there, and it was hard for me to understand how you got. Had to stop at a certain place so that another station 2,000, 3,000 miles away could put their identity in. And
well, the thing is John, that I work for Westwood One, which is Infinity, and so does Humble Harv here. And we're on, what, Harvey, 125 affiliates?
No, about 140.
140. Now you picture that from Maine to Miami to Anchorage, Alaska to Monterey, and all points in between. I answer a request line, I get someone sunbathing in Miami, and I got some guy snow-locked in Anchorage. Try to say, have a nice day. What a great day for a barbecue.
It's the same here, because we never know what time of day or night people are listening to the internet.
Well, Harvey goes through life mostly like that.
Is this true? Are you going to take this kind of abuse from this?
That's true, actually, it's true. No, you see, this cyberspace thing is really very interesting, because what you do is park yourself inside of somebody's. It's like, remember that movie, Tron? That's what this is all. When I sit in front of a computer, I can think of Tron. I think all these things are just sitting there, man, and this incredible, it's like 59 billion people in an office.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take this thing, and I'll have www.www.w.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very personal. Today, you bring the whole world right into you.
Absolutely.
But you know something? If you do it right, you can make it sound really one-to-one.
Yes, you can.
I mean, you really can. You got to play the corporate game. You got to play by the rules. You know, Harvey, you worked one of the most restrictive formats that in the world, Drake's format. We both did.
Well, that's what started it, yeah.
Excuse me, what is Drake's format?
Oh, that was Boss Radio,
He's the god of radio.
Let's talk about that. Talk about radio the way it used to be.
Radio the way it used to be was, I'll take you back to 1957, that's when my first show.
I was
on a
10.
Radio station.
I was
I'm
still
now 112 years old, so I can relay the story. WHAT in Philadelphia, which was an R&B station, is now Talk, I believe. You were hired at a radio station because you were a musicologist. That was it. If you knew the music, if you had a rap, if you had a shtick, if you had something different than the average citizen on the street, and you could relay that, sort of like a preacher.
But
you know?
Let me ask you something, Harv. Did you have the choice to be able to pick your own music to
Absolutely.
Play? Absolutely. So you didn't have a program director.
We did.
You didn't have anybody sitting there telling you you had to spin and how many rotations per day? No.
That was a program director then meant the guy that was responsible for the programming.
Uh-huh.
It didn't mean that he initiated it. He was the guy that kept it all together.
Uh-huh.
He looked at the clock and said, okay, between 2 and 4, Harv's on, and between 4 and 6, Kay Williams is on, and Roscoe is on between 6 and 8, and that's, you know, and we had, for instance, I had the Italian hour. Mm-hmm.
What was the...
No.
Wait a minute.
Don't make a phone. I was working for a record distributor, Mercury Records, at the time. This was before I had my own show on WHAT. I was the engineer. We used to have a studio where the control room was in the middle. Mm-hmm. We had like 5 little studios around. Monday through Friday, I used to do Frank Trombetta's show. Frank was a gentleman in his 60s at the time who was an entrepreneur. You could say like an entrepreneur, Frank was. Frank bought an hour on the air. And he could do with whatever he wanted with that hour. It was the only Italian show in Philadelphia, which has a sizable Italian population.
So I imagine your heaviest rotation was Frank Sinatra?
No, he never
Tony
played
Bennett.
Frank Sinatra in his life. He played all Italian records from Italy.
Oh, real
the
stuff.
Whole thing,
wow.
He used to do was take the news, and he would... I have funny stories about that, but I won't get into it. about Frank. Anyway, Frank used to take the news and come in about an hour before and rewrite the news in Italian.
Uh-huh.
He owned what did he own? He owned dry goods stores. He owned laundromats. He owned restaurants. He was a very big businessman. And he also had ties to the Italian opera in Naples. And he used to bring over singers, and they would sing in Philadelphia. I mean, really big events and things like that. So he was in, and he wanted to be on the air himself. He had a very deep, basso profundo voice. And I still remember the intro. It was the Gemma Oil Company. Signore, signorini, mi presenta la programma Gemma. With your host, Mr. Frankitra, Signor Franca Trombetta. Mr. Trombetta, please. That was the intro. And
you
I had to say,
did you have to be
Mr.
The one?
Trombetta, please. And when I did that, boom, the mic went on, and I'm a little bit. And he started up and did his number, and he played some wonderful stuff.
Wow.
Italian things, you know, from Italy. He used to bring in a stack of 78s, and he used to make sure that the right side was up. And he used to make sure he would pick them. This was before Post-its.
Yeah.
You know,
uh-huh.
he would put little things. Yeah, he would put little things. Don't forget to play this E, eh? Mm-hmm. And make sure I played it. A very nice man. Very nice, lovely man.
And you were working for Mercury then?
I was working for Mercury. I was
57?
Yeah, I was the height of, 1957. During the day, I worked for Mercury, and at night, I played my own
records.
You
worked for I.B. Green.
No, at night I would play my own records, which would be the height of payola. I don't know how much more you could get it, man.
I don't know. It's pretty up there nowadays.
But radio then. Radio then.
I don't know if there's a statute of limitations on this. Yeah. I wouldn't go on with that. You
yeah, exactly. There's no statute of limitations.
Radio
on payola.
Was very simple then, in that people, this was before Drake.
Who is
There's
Drake?
There's no before Drake.
I still don't know who Drake
is. Let me, Bill Drake was a program director who came along and said, we're going to format radio. Music is going to be the forward momentum of the radio station. And correct me if I'm wrong, Harvey, and the jocks will weave their talent in between the songs, always moving forward. Brevity, continuity, creativity, and talent.
Uh-huh.
What I leave out?
Well, what he did was
a couple of hours at Martoni's.
Martoni's, oh my God.
Basically, the idea was to take the meat and cut off the fat and just leave the meat.
Yeah.
And the fat being a drivel that this track is used to get into, which could be called diarrhea of the mouth.
You can't say it in 10 seconds or less.
And people would just go on and on and on and on. And Drake's idea was, we don't need that kind of jive. Let's get to the meat and later for the fat. So what he would do was he structured a format. And the format called for, here's where you talk, here's where you don't talk. You talk in front of this, and here's why we have a jingle here. And when we have a jingle here, you don't talk there if it's a zero. But there were rules, there were regulations. Before that, there were semi-rules and regulations. KFWB had a format. KRLA had a format. WNEW. All radio stations, including WABC in New York, who at that time was King of the Hill. Everybody had a format, but it was loose. Each guy interpreted the format in his own way. And if he got out of line, the PD would call him in and say, look, we got a blah, 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 like that. This was a structured format for the first time. Every guy lived with it.
You know that as a jock, you know, it almost had your hands cuffed unless you really sat down and think about what you're going to do. And as a listener, the thing I loved about listening to Harvey, and I listened to Harvey last year of high school, and then when I got into radio in 67 in Duluth, Minnesota at WEBC, we'd get bootleg tapes of the boss jocks, and we'd all try to do it the way they did it.
Of which Harv was one.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. The best. I mean, you listen to guys like Humble Harv, the real Don Steele, Robert W. Morgan, Charlie Tuna, Mark Elliott, and jocks like that, and we'd all try to copy them. So what we wanted to do was be as creative as we can, be as talented as we can, and yet, like Bill Drake told me when I had the pleasure of working for him, respect the music.
Mm-hmm.
Respect the music.
Do you think that anybody really respects the music anymore today in contemporary pop radio? Or do you think that they just don't care?
I think in... Well, I'm not in pop radio or in the AC. I love the oldies. I do oldies. I do country. I mean, how can you respect the music with some of the lyrics and some of the songs now? And
I agree.
I won't go into those formats talking about killing people or maiming or doing that. I don't respect that. I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to ask was, you picked your own records. Did you watch the charts? Did you watch Cashbox or Billboard or to pick the hits? Or did you have in the locale, did you know what was going on? How did you figure out what to play and to keep your numbers up?
Right, whoever gave you the most money.
No, that was not it.
I was going to say, did you guys ever personally get
I'm going to say it 100 million times.
No, 1,000 times no.
It was not that way at all.
Okay.
The payola was what you call your icing on the cake. Because if you didn't play what the public wanted to hear, you were soon out of a job.
Okay.
I don't care how many stiffs that you got paid to play, which with translation, lousy records, were just really bad, and somebody had enough money and said, look, I'm going to give you $1,000 and you play this four times a night.
Yeah.
Well, if you did and it was a piece of crap,
then
you were killing your own, you were strangling yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So therefore, payola was like on the fringe end of it. Mm-hmm. But believe me, the way you really determine what to play was from the street, from record hops, which we all did. Mm-hmm. You would get requests.
Call-outs.
You would read Billboard. You would go to the record stores yourself.
Yeah.
And you took your own surveys, and you just felt it. At that time, the guys that could feel it in their gut were the biggest jocks in the country. Jocko, I don't know if you remember.
Sure, Jocko.
Jocko.
Sure.
And then other people like him.
Hot Rod.
Are there any of today's contemporary disc jockeys that we know of that are allowed to play their own choices apart from the small stations?
No.
So it's all program directed?
Well, you have research groups. It is so now micromanaged.
Uh-huh.
But as a jock or as a program director, I like that now.
Well, it takes a lot of the pressure off of you.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But you have more than one mind looking at what song to play.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, on the other side of that coin is, I like, for as a program director, to be able to use my gut and say, you know, I like that song.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, will my audience like it?
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, not every song won't be a hit in every market. A lot of it is regional.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
How many songs have each of you been personally responsible for breaking before other people heard
them?
That's
a good question, Jeannie, yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to establish here, Counselor, that the influence of the disc jockey in those days was very important. And obviously, they could be their own program directors.
1961, I was at WIBG on the All Night Show, actually the winter of 1960. A record came in by Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. And the A side was Teardrops on My Letter, which was a, what you call your standard R&B kind of semi-doo-wop thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other side knocked me off my chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I started playing it, and we started getting terrific requests. I took it from my record hop. I'll always remember this. It was Woodrow Wilson High School in Camden, New Jersey. And a young man by the name of Ernest Evans came with a wonderful thing called Dancing Dinosaurs, something like that, and his manager, Henry. He worked in the chicken store. He was a chicken flicker in South Philadelphia.
What's a chicken flicker?
He takes the, much like a general manager does to a program director, takes the feathers off of
them. Pulls the feathers off the chickens. Hey, it was honest work. It was hard, grueling, terrible, honest work.
Yeah.
I would never put the guy down. That's not a put down.
No.
That's a compliment to Chubby Checker, who it was.
Anyways, are you serious?
Ernest Evans,
wow.
The song was The Twist. We put two desks together, and he got on top of her and did dance. Chubby was about, no lie, about 350 pounds then, and he was about 16 or 17 years old. Anyway, when he got back off the, back off the desk, I started playing The Twist. They started dancing. We had kids from Newark, New Jersey dancing to it, all the way from Newark to Trenton, I mean, from Newark to Camden would be in California the equivalent of going from San Diego to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go more than 25 miles in New York, forget it, man. Mm-hmm. You know, boy, I got to pack a lunch. Wait, we're crazy. So, At any event, he wrote down the record, his manager, Henry. This is a true story. He wrote the record, you know, wrote the song title, went in, cut it, gave it to Dick Clark to see what he would think. Dick Clark, at the time, Chubby was still some other Ernest Evans, and Dick Clark's wife at the time said, I think that name is not going to make it. I think, let's see, who's the biggest one now? Fats Domino. So let's say Fats, Chubby,
wait, Dick,
Domino,
Dick Clark's
Checker.
Wife came up with this?
Yeah.
Oh, my
Dick
God.
Dick Clark's wife came up with Chubby Checker's name.
That's
right.
That's a new one.
I never knew
I
that
either.
At all.
Anyway, that was one of the records. The other one was the Bristol Stomp, which was my dance in Bristol, Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
which I named after a record called Every Day of the Week by the Students,
mm-hmm.
which was... And the Dovells were going to do some Out in the Cold Again or some kind of redo on Frankie Lyman's record. And one of the record promotion guys ran and said, hey, there's this big dance in Bristol. Humble Harvest playing it. He's calling it the Bristol Stomp.
Mm-hmm.
So they wrote this fantastic lyric. Imagine how incredible. It took them 2 hours to write it or whatever, because listen to the opening line. The kids in Bristol are sharp as a pistol when they do the Bristol Stomp. Now, you got to be about 4 years old to write that good. But the whole thing was, and I'm not knocking them, but the whole thing was that it was a complete plagiarism of the song. Mm-hmm. Now, why Leonard Chess didn't get a little peeved and his friends, I don't know, but I guess he settled with Bernie Mann. But the thing was, that was the Bristol song, was my dance. And the other one that I really like to talk about, because it's something that was really next to my heart, there was a record distributor, Universal Distributors, and I used to go in and just go through all the throwouts. He had all these records laying around where the record dealers would come in and say, Harry, anything new here? Anything, you know, exciting? I need a hit, you know. I got to sell some stuff. So, yeah, I'll look on the counter over there. So I would go in and look around and play some stuff on his little 45 machine. And I put a record on, orange label. I still remember the label colors. And I said, Harry, his name is Harry Finfer. Harry, this has got to be the biggest smash I ever heard, because it's the worst sounding vocal I ever heard, which means it's a smash. So he said, really? Uh-oh. You really believe this? I said, yeah. So I took it to Roy Schwartz. I was on WIBG. He was the program director. He heard it. He said, this record is terrible. Terrible. I said, that's right, man. I said, that's why it's going to be a smash. He said, I'm not going to let you play this. I said, look, I'll tell you what, Roy. Your daughter's in there. She was 7 years old. If she says it's good, can we put it on? Will you change your mind? Yeah, okay. So we put the record on. She freaked out, right?
I take that in a good way, right?
She wanted to play it over and over until she wore it out. We took it to WIBG, put it on the air. I think I played it twice that night, and the next day they had about 4,000 orders. A little thing called Angel Baby, Rosie and the Originals.
I thought that emanated from California.
I did. I did. Art LeBeau? No, it did.
Yeah, it was done here, right?
Rosie was from San Diego.
Yeah.
She recorded here. The only guy playing it was Art LeBeau and I think Huggy Boy, and that was it. It never reached KFWB.
Huggy's still playing it.
Yeah, Huggy's still playing it. But there's an instance where you say, how do records get on the air?
Mm-hmm.
Three different ways they got on the air. They got one from my record hub in Bristol, mm-hmm. one from, because I myself loved it,
mm-hmm.
And the other one was from a seven-year-old child. But mainly the records got on the air with hard, persistent work from the promotion guys, because mm-hmm. I know I was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when we come back, we're going to play a record right now, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the difference between AM and FM, all right? How about a little Clarence Frogman Henry? I don't know why I love you, but I do.
This is BluePower.com. Radio Free Earth. Brian Roberts and Humble Hire.
The Burner, baby. Ray Charles, I'm here.
Give me a Have Moisey, would you?
Have Moisey.
Have Moisey.
Give me chills. Charles, what I say? Who knows what time it is? Who even knows what day it is? It's like how I went through the 60s, man.
We're in that windowless environment where it could be any day, any time, any hour.
Yeah, I like that.
But that's kind of like the web, guys, you know? That's
right. That guy, that was the original. The original was recorded in a radio station in Atlanta. The original of What I Say. That's a redo in the studio, obviously, with a lot of people clapping like that. But they did it in a radio station.
WABE.
Yeah. And by the way, the one before that, But I Do, when I first heard that on the radio, I was traveling down the Shorkill Expressway in Philadelphia, better known as the Schuylkill Expressway. But I thought for sure that was Fats Domino. Yeah. I said, Fats Domino got a new record. He had one currently. I said, my God, they released two records at the same time. Mm. But no, it wasn't. It was Clarence Frogman.
I loved him. I loved him. What was his most famous record? Do you remember?
That one, wasn't it?
No.
Your most famous?
Why'd they call him Clarence Frogman Henry?
I'm a lonely frog.
Oh, that's it.
I ain't got a home.
Okay.
I
ain't got no home, yeah. But this one, I think
this was a bigger seller.
This was a bigger seller.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's real good friends with Rush Limbaugh. He calls him all the time.
Really, huh?
You've got to be kidding.
No, he does. He does. He calls him all the time.
What does he call him?
Calls him Frogman.
Oh, okay. I was going to say. I was hoping he'd call him something.
All radio right. Radio is different, and I want Brian to tell you why.
Okay. I got to tell you, back when I first got into radio, in 67, I was in the Air Force. I was laying in my bunk. It was in Duluth, Minnesota. I heard a jock on WEBC. Called him up, and we started talking, and he invited me down to the radio station. And I said, this looks easy. I can do that. I went down, four or five times, and finally it was the station went off the air, and he sat me down on the console and said, okay, go ahead and do it. And I started doing it, and lo and behold, I started thinking of my favorite disc jockeys back home in Los Angeles.
You weren't in the least bit self-conscious at all?
Yeah, it was off the air. You know, I mean, it was, you know, I mean, I was sitting there with a reel-to-reel.
And you heard your voice played back?
Yeah.
It didn't freak you out?
Not with my ego.
All right.
And I started thinking of Humble Harv. I started thinking of, you know, of Morgan of Steel and stuff like that. And I took a little bit of him, a little bit of him, a little bit of him, and, you know, started developing a style. But we all had camaraderie back then. We all had each jock cross-promoted the next jock. And Harvey, I got to tell you, this is my brother here. We worked at, what, four stations? I've been fired at four different stations.
Four and counting.
Was it because of guilt by association?
No. I was doing mornings at Q102. Harvey was doing afternoons. People would call him in the afternoon and say, are you really going for a sex change? He said, where do you hear that? Brian said it this morning on the air.
This is their idea of promotion. Well, I heard that Rush had gone in for a sex change, too.
Really?
So there you go.
but the thing is, you cross-plug. You promote because you respect the next guy.
Well, how do you... All right, now, I think the whole nature of radio has definitely changed since the quote-unquote good old days. How do you... What is your guys' take on, let's say, Howard Stern?
Silence.
Blank silence.
That was what is known as a nine-month pregnant pause.
You got to respect Howard Stern for being a pioneer, doing what he does and having the balls to do it.
Yeah,
but you
absolutely.
Also have to look back at when Howard Stern did it and the balls the radio station showed by allowing him to do it. Mm-hmm. Okay? That type of radio is good for him. And God knows he has the ratings for his demographics.
Absolutely.
That's
not
what
I do. And so does Rush Limbaugh, though. And you know, again, and so does Dr. Laura. I mean, those are the talk show people. But even so, how about Rick Dees?
Rick Dees been around a long time. Great jock, great entertainer. Now, there we go. We talk about entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
Radio to me has always been and always will be, as we know, a cliche, theater of the mind, but that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I get up, I walk down the hall, I feel like a gladiator walking into an arena with my headphones.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there to do a show. No matter how restricted I may be, mm-hmm. formatically, I can still weave my talent and get across my feelings and my emotions into that 10-second or 15-second window I have without taking away from the music.
All right,
and I learned that from the guy next to me.
From Harvey. But have either one of you ever experienced a format or a station playlist or whatever that was really cross against your grain and it was difficult for you to get behind the music?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We won't mention names, but one was here in Los Angeles that we both worked for.
But the thing of it is that when you work for a station like that, you know prior to going in that it's going to be tough working there.
Oh, wait a second.
But it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be...
Did you?
No, it's not going to be anything that... I wasn't prepared for it. And Brian wasn't prepared for what actually happened.
No.
The program director was...
No, let's not mention names.
No, I'm not going to say
I'm never going to work for the man again, but I got to tell you, I got hired at this radio station off an air check. The guy knew me, hired me. He said, this is what I want you to do. Do it that way. I'm going to put you on in the morning. He said, I want you to do 7 to midnight for a week or so, get acclimated. I went in and did my act. He called me on Wednesday. He said, you're going mornings tomorrow. I love you. Memos are out. Listen to Brian Roberts. This is the way I want my station to sound. I went mornings that next day, did a set at 6 o'clock in the morning. 6:03, the PD calls me and says, Brian, what are you doing? I says, I'm doing my show. No, I want you to do it this way.
Oh, no.
And he took everything away. After 30-some-odd years on the air, I was afraid after 4 or 5 months working for this guy to key my mic.
Oh my God. He
took away everything, but I allowed it to be taken away, and eventually I left. Mm-hmm. But no, sometimes you don't know what you're getting into when you go into it.
Yeah, I can mm-hmm. imagine. I can imagine.
Did the same thing to Harvey.
He did the same thing to me, and I really don't understand how a guy like that can remain as a program director, and everybody know. I mean, he forced one of the ladies that was doing a shift to burst into tears.
He threw a jock up against the wall. Now,
not the lady jock.
No, another jock. Now, tell you, now, I was waiting for him to do that to me. I'm 6'2 and a half, 230 pounds.
Yeah, I was gonna
throw
say
me up
thing.
Against the wall. We're both going through it.
Oh, man.
And armed.
And armed.
Okay, you know.
I've got a license, okay?
Let me ask you something.
I used to sit down in the control room and take out a .45 and put it on the console. Come on, memo me, mother. Memo me.
That sounds like some of the rap sessions I've had to engineer.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. If you had any advice to give today's young and aspiring, college kids that want to get out into the radio broadcasting field, do you suggest that they go to college? Do you suggest that they start working on their voiceover tapes? What would you suggest? Because today's climate is obviously a great deal more,
competitive.
There's a lot more of them. It's competitive, but it's competitive now because they're not weighing so much on the personality as they are weighing
That's
on
That's
going
to change.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I hope so. I really miss those days.
Well, if you want some
advice yeah.
The first piece of advice I can offer is that if you don't want to devote your life to doing this, don't even start.
Yeah.
Secondly, if you do actually want to really do it and you make that choice in your head, then don't imitate anybody that you hear on the radio.
No.
Think of what you want to say yourself. And most importantly, take your head out of the garbage can. That is not entertainment.
No, it's not.
Filth and horrible things on the radio and seeing how bad and how funky you can get is not entertainment.
Let me tell you, when I started K-Earth, in 1990, and Bill Drake took me in there, and I did mornings. He said, and this was right at the start of Desert Storm. Everybody's putting down, Saddam Hussein, putting down this, putting down that, putting down Iraqis. Bill said to me, I don't want you talking about the war. Don't say anything negative. Don't even say anything positive about it. Don't mention anything. Just do your normal thing. Mm-hmm. Entertain. If you mention the war, it's going to be in the news. And that's what we did. Don't put anybody down. Don't talk garbage. Don't talk trash.
Yeah.
You don't need to do that. Yeah. There's no reason to do that.
No, but this is what the people are doing. Starting from Stern and working your way down.
Yeah, shock jobs.
This is Tom Likas, et cetera, et cetera. And anyone who has the freedom to be on the radio can do what they want to. Remember, it's a free country.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's still America, and you're allowed to say what you want to do.
Ever since they deregulated the FCC.
It doesn't make it right, but you're at least allowed to do it.
I asked you earlier about AM and FM. What was the feeling inside the stations, inside the AM stations, when FM first hit?
Good question. Was that a threat?
Well, I can tell you firsthand because we turned on the first FM station in Philadelphia. The first jazz station in the world was Sid Mark and I. I was working on WHAT AM, and they just had installed WHAT FM. And it was a transmitter there with a couple big tubes. And Billy Banks and Dolly Banks owned the radio station, brother and sister. They came to Sid and I, and they said, look, we want to play piano music, all right? We don't care what it is, because the only people listening are doctors and attorneys anyway, and people like that. So, at the time, you had to have a radio about 400 yards long with 17 million tubes made by Fisher or somebody like, and that was it. And you had to, keep it with a fan on it because it was,
got too hot.
This was the FM. And most of the broadcasts were very esoteric. There were no sponsors because everybody said, are you crazy? I'm going to go sponsor a show nobody listens to. I don't even know. What is FM? what does it mean, FM? What is it? So it took a long time to catch on, I think. What, 20 years, really, before it really kicked in hard?
70s. The early 70s.
Yeah,
Big Daddy with Tom Donahue.
We're talking WHAT-FM, 1957. So really, like the middle,
13 years.
20 years, something like that.
I was working at KYA in San Francisco. And the big battle was KYA KFRC, and a very good friend of both of ours, Mucho Morales, was on KFRC. I was on KYA, And San Francisco is such a hip city that FM was really taking off. And I looked at FM, and I didn't want to go over there because, you know, it was...
Hippies.
The hippies. And I didn't want to do that. And I fought and fought. The first FM station I ever worked at was Cute 102 FM in Los Angeles, and then went over to Magic 106 FM. And I found out that it's not the frequency, it's the format and the talent.
Mm-hmm.
FM is obviously has the wider band. It's clearer. It's
stereo. It was the first one to go stereo. So.
FM really did help change the music in the United States. AM had a stranglehold up to that point, certainly on the music. And Drake had been involved. He started with AM, right? With Boss Radio. It was AM.
FM, when it started, is where the internet is now.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was very little, if no regulation whatsoever.
Yeah.
As far as formats go, anything that you want to do is on, like this show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because this show has a purpose. It is talking about blues.
Yeah.
So if you like blues, you put this on, and you don't hear 9 million commercials, and you're happy because you're hearing something different.
Well, you're not going to play one bad apple Buddy Osmonds tonight.
And no, I don't think so. No.
FM was the same way.
I like that song.
FM was an alternative format.
And also ABC.
You're right, absolutely.
1, 2, 3, he's in.
It certainly helped my records, the records I produced, because AM would never have touched them. They would never have touched them. Bunch of long-haired hippie freaks. How about we do a little blues now, Jeannie? We'll take so we can take a breather in here. How about a little Howlin' Wolf?
Howlin' Wolf on www.bluepower.com.
Bless your heart. Down on that killing floor, Howlin' Wolf.
There we go again. It's the mystery of those little gremlins.
That sounded like
gremlins.
Chuck Berry.
Yeah, it's we're having a problem again with this loop here.
With that cassette, huh? Well, listen.
Let's do it manually. Go for
for it.
Go ahead. Do it. Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah, let's go for it, man.
Yeah, let's see if we can
sorry
get
about this.
Good morning. This is Humble.
Yeah.
This is Harv. This is Harv in them.
The legendary Chuck Berry. That's right. The original Chuck Berry. This Saturday night at 6 and 8 p.m. at Magic Mountain. A lot of fun. Another great party idea from the burner, the one and only. KRLA to Fresno and Trenton, New Jersey with love. The two original towns of our city. Absolutely merciless. This is Humble Arm. You got it. Don't lose it. KRLA. By the way, Barry Boswick, who stars in that, will prove that George Washington did not have wooden teeth. As a matter of fact, the only guy with wooden teeth I know is Wolfman Jack. Mr. Lonely. Then by Bobby Vint. Could that be the story of your life? I hope not. This is the star of my life, Oldies and KRLA, an unbeatable combination.
Let me tell you about the
DC Rider. I assume it's a little bit like Amtrak Rider, or close to it anyway. 919 is KRLA.
In case you don't know what that is, everybody, that's something called an air check, okay? And that's where the disc jockey airs, takes his show, and only plays what he says between the records. And that's why you don't hear all of the cuts on there.
The tape goes on when the mic goes on.
That's
the tape
right.
Stops when the
that's
mic
stops. Right. All right, we were talking about radio, and what do you think management can do today to make radio better?
Respect programming.
Okay.
Number one, respect programming. I remember the days in Harvey, we walk into the radio station and the pictures of the jocks were on the wall in the lobby. Now you got the salesmen up on the lobby.
Are you kidding?
No, at some stations they do. You know, and look at your program director as someone who's going to generate the revenue for you to sell. And the program director looks at the jock as the spokes in the wheel that's going to deliver the goods.
Deliver the goods.
See, you don't know whether today you walk into a radio station, you see the pictures that are on the wall. You a person that doesn't, if they didn't see the transmitter in the back, they would think they're at Century 21.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, selling houses or whatever, man. I mean, it's, or selling whatever.
Kasha.
Post toasties. But what they're selling, man, is entertainment.
That's it.
But they forgot about the entertainment, and they're strictly in the bottom line, and God forbid, the stock market goes to hell in a handbasket. You're going to see all these multi-billion-dollar giants.
That's it.
Divesting themselves.
You know, you look at the talent, and then I emphasize talent. I mean, I really emphasize the talent. Music is done by music research and by gut feeling and national exposure. But you got the talent in there that's going to weave everything together. And a program director, when I was a PD, you walk in and you're positive. If I walked in and I see a jock on the phone talking to his agent or trying to make a booking of something, and we've all hustled a couple of women on the request line a few times. I'm not putting that down.
But that's positive.
Yeah, but you want to walk in and you want to see the jock with the headphones on, the music cranked up and bopping because he's entertaining himself there. And if he's entertaining himself, he's entertaining the audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's right. What you want. Be good to your talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Randy Michaels in an article said that if you're underpaying your talent, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
Shame on you. Give your talent everything you can, support them, because they'll make you rich. Your programming department's going to make you rich.
Did you hear that, John?
Yeah,
thank
I
you.
Did.
Thank you very much, Ryan.
There's a station in Los Angeles, Harvey, we were talking about this,
joke there.
That played 18 and a half minutes of spots an hour. 18 and a half
Whoa.
Minutes, so they can generate the revenue.
Yeah.
Well, if this station had the numbers and were in the top five or the top seven, they could play 8 minutes worth of spots an hour at double the fee.
Absolutely.
Right. Right.
And give a great product.
Yeah.
That is a, you know, I
See
never
what they are
at
doing, they're in the process of suicide. That's what they're in the process of doing. This is what AM did in the days of the come on down, baby. And people said, it's enough of that crap, and turn the FM on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
So now they got 18 minutes of spots, which is actually
and a promo.
Yeah, and on top of that, a promo.
Not to mention the traffic report.
We play more music.
Yeah.
Wait.
And traffic and weather.
Which is two more minutes than how many spots we had in 1957.
Yeah.
So don't tell me. I don't want anybody in the, all the mavens in the business are going to, well, Harv, it is, I don't want to hear all this jive. Go sit in the boardroom. God bless you. Make all the bread you want to make. But you're scaring away the audience.
You're
driving them away.
To CDs.
And also to MP3 technology.
That's right. What's this new one
and
going
the internet.
On, Abby? We were talking about.
Well, there's a new format which will emerge in the year 2001. They're getting it ready now. There are 500 channels called CD radio. Mm-hmm. No commercials, no nothing. What you do is $9 a month, and you have this little antenna type thing you put on your rear window of your car, and a special cassette that you put in, which has a coded thing in it. And
but like a receiver or something?
Yeah, but you use your regular radio, but the cassette they mail you or something, and it has a coded thing in there, and you pay $9 a month. You will then have the opportunity to hear uninterrupted all over the United States 500 channels.
Subscriber talk, service.
Everything. Talk.
Yeah. Like cable
like
TV.
22 talk channels.
Yeah, but how long will
channels?
That go on? Because quite honestly, that's how cable TV started. Now everything that I see, HBO and all of these things, there's always commercials on it. So how long is it going to be a commercial-free thing?
There's going to be commercials also.
Yeah.
If you want commercials, there will be channels in that 500 and have them. But that's not the point. The point I'm trying to make is to the, or pleading, both of us with any of these guys, if we ever got a chance to, well, what you are doing is killing the goose that laid the golden egg.
That's right.
Quickly. Mm-hmm. Faster than it would have gone normally, because now here is a person listening to this show. They don't have the radio on. They have their computer on.
That's right.
And most people at nighttime are sitting at home. They work all day. They're tired. They want to be entertained. So they have three choices. One, they can close the door and make love to their wife. Two, they can turn the computer on and see the entire world. Three, they can turn the TV on and get numbed again on their couch or whatever and then go to bed.
Yeah.
So
I'd like to do one and three.
I notice I left out one.
What's that?
The radio.
The radio. Yeah.
I left out the radio because the radio is not entertaining enough now.
Theater of the mind.
It can be. I mean, we have jocks out there who have so much talent and who aren't using it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a friend of mine just got hired, Bruce Vidal. He was on Kiss FM for years. Mm-hmm. He's now going to Denver. He was off the air for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at other jocks like Mucho Morales.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was off the air for a year. And when we go over to Westwood One, where Harvey and I are, I mean, on our weekend lineup, I'm on in the morning, Mucho's on, then you have Larry McKay, you have Humble Harv, you got Mike Daniels. All of us worked in L.A. for years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, here, these guys, we are sitting there just waiting to ooze our talent out
to explode.
I would say that the satellite is where it's at now, and growing even bigger.
Well, look, now wait, now somebody might a young man, 20 years old, might be sitting in front of his computer listening to this and say, these guys are dinosaurs. They know what the hell they're talking about. They're antiques, man. Get them off the air. Well, that's fine. So then you find for me somebody in their 30s and tell me who they listen to during the 70s or 80s, mm-hmm. that they have now, that they can emulate now. I can you think of one? I can't think of anybody.
When I was driving into Los Angeles, and I got discharged from the Air Force in 1970, my ex-wife and I were driving into Los Angeles. I was coming home, and I hit L.A., I think it was about 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. I mean, just out of the Air Force. I'd already been on radio for two and a half years, and I was listening to Humble Harv. And I turned to my wife, I swear to God, and I said, someday I'm going to be on L.A. radio. Someday I'm going to do mornings. And I'm listening to him, KHJ and Humble Harv. You know, and I mean, just the way he said the call letters and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her, and, you know, it took me, several years. I went to San Francisco first and then to L.A. And once you make that, you got to fight twice as hard to stay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it seems the older you get, and the more talent you get, the more seasoned you get, the less they want you.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact is the less they can push you around, the less that you, they have to pay you. I mean, face it, there's a greed in power, there's a greed in money, and it's basically too much of a good thing is destroying the business. We've been watching it. That's why MP3 is posing such a threat to the record companies. That's why Seagram sold its share and Sony. And, you know, I mean, all these companies that started out with that little corporate mentality are starting to see the folly of their decisions. And I
record
think it's
companies
about damn
could
time.
Go bye-bye.
Oh, thank God.
They could go bye-bye.
Thank God. You know, speaking of records, don't you think we ought to spend a couple more
in the next couple of years are going to be very interesting indeed.
Yes, indeed.
I'll tell you, as far as I'm concerned, the people that are ultimately going to pay for this dearly are going to be the stockholders.
Yeah.
Because their dreams are going to crash, and people have, you know, put billions, I don't mean millions, billions, fortunes into these radio these corporations
right.
now, that now don't own three stations or six. They own 600 stations.
And the real person that's getting screwed is the listener.
Used to be seven stations, right, that you could own. Yeah.
You could own seven. The rule was made in 1934, and a very good rule, because that nobody wanted to have nobody wanted one corporation to dominate with any kind of political view or any other kind of view an entire major scene. So you were allowed to have seven stations. That was it.
That was it.
Seven AM stations, seven FM stations, and seven television stations. Not in the same market, though, man.
Yeah.
And now, in L.A., that's exactly what we have.
You piss somebody off, you're out of the business.
Absolutely. You'll never work in this town again.
That's true.
And the other town, and the next one, and
that's
the other
right.
one after that.
Yeah. Anyone you know, that have our affiliate stations on them.
You know, Ricky Nelson, I think we're wrapping this up. Ricky Nelson said it best in the song Garden Party. If memories are all I have, I'd rather buy a truck. You know, I'd rather drive a truck.
Rather drive
That's
a
what he
truck.
Said. If memories are all I have, I'd rather sell cars.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
well, you
man.
Guys got some great memories, you know.
How much no one can take it from us.
We got a little bit of time left. Let's listen to Aretha, because we can't do any shows without a woman singing.
I know, we'll get killed.
We'll get killed.
All right, little Aretha Franklin.
This is for us, our sister Aretha.
That's right.
How could you hurt me so bad? Baby, you
can never get enough of that Aretha. You go. Sing it. Sing it. Sing it. Sing it.
I know you love that girl, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Hey, guess what? Did you hear the familiar strains of... Is it? No, it's not time to call this day, is it?
It is, and I hate to do it, because we got Humble Harv and Brian Roberts here.
Oh, I can't believe it. We had these guys live and telling us everything there is to know. I mean,
what they don't know is that when they leave, we're going to listen to this 1,000 times to see what we can learn.
And probably publish a book from all of the wisdom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, listen, will you guys come back sometime?
Absolutely.
And,
when we have back, we're a little more together.
Yeah, when we have an engineer doing a
absolutely.
woman's job here. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, come back and see us again. We'll be having Widespread Panic on coming up pretty soon.
Yes, Widespread Panic. As a matter of fact, we're going to do the show on the 1st of July.
Great. I'm looking forward
that
to
afternoon.
That. And in the meanwhile, you all take it easy. Be safe. Drive carefully. Don't get angry behind the wheel or behind the gun.
Thank you, Humble Harv. And Brian Roberts, thanks so much for being our guest
My
today.
Pleasure. Anybody wants to get a hold of us, they can email us here.
Absolutely.
Looking for a 5-year contract, 6 figures, and total freedom.
I think you want to be in front of a TV?
No. I've got a voice for television and a face for radio.
All right, listen.
Harvey, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
God bless you both.
Right. And if anybody wants to contact Harvey and Brian, be sure to send them an email also through www.bluepower.com, and we will forward it right on to them. In the meanwhile, I'm Jeannie. And
I'm John R. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks a lot. See you next time.